Mama.
Blog
yes, I do smoke
heroin.
Beware of carrots, beware of onions, beware of snow women. Good evening, and welcome to Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. Early Birds, Fog Bane, and GGSI Paper in the chat. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dale Kay from the Spook Show, accompanied
by... If only they knew. I'm Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and we're here along with...
I might be cold, but I am no snowman. It is I, Garza Gold, blay it to you all. There you go.
And I will say right now that none of us, on our spare time, dress up as clowns. Anyway, we are celebrating the new year. This is our first show of 2023. So what have we got for you? Not one, not two, but three tales, brand new. Well, they were when they came out.
right.
First episode night.
Yep. First episodes. New year, new show episodes. Yep.
So are they old new shows or new old shows? That's what I'm trying to work out in my little head.
And the answer is yes.
Okay. The answer is always yes.
And maybe. Yes, and maybe.
Particularly.
This is Schrodinger.
It's all good, especially if ice cream is included.
Yep. And these are not pilot episodes. These are actual first episodes. Because sometimes there was a big
What's
difference.
What's the difference? What is the difference?
Oh, we saw that.
The difference
is
sometimes
huge.
Sometimes it was a different cast. Sometimes it was a different, completely different story. So it was interesting. In the pilot episode of the Martin and Lewis show, they had Bob Hope with Martin and Lewis, and they went into a point where Martin Lewis tried to ad lib with Bob Hope, but he just buried them alive. The next week had almost the same script, but they had Lucille Ball instead of Bob Hope. But it was amazing. I mean, that show went to like 40 minutes long, that pilot episode, that never got aired.
That's the problem with an ego, I guess.
Yeah.
Bob Hope buried them alive trying to ad lib with them. Jerry Lewis got a couple good lines in there, but boy, Bob Hope just buried them alive.
I can see him doing that. He was a quick thinker on stage. Mm-hmm. He could ad lib when he had to.
Yeah.
I used to be a quick thinker. Yeah. Then my thinker broke.
GGSI Paper dropped this in the chat here for you folks listening in the archives
or
not following along in the chat. He got a book by John Dunning. It's the ultimate encyclopedia of old-time radio from 1925 through 1976. So you know that there's some CBS Radio Mystery Theater in there. And he likes to look up and read about the particular shows that we present here. Is that cool or what?
That is cool.
That is cool.
Very cool.
Did you get a chance, Dale, to peruse that little book I sent you guys?
I've been perusing it a bit. Yeah, a little bit. Now, I haven't had a chance to completely concentrate on it, but I have had it open. I've read some parts to it. A very cool introduction by one of the writers of Great Horror Radio. Oh, down goat, down.
Down goat.
Darn goat. But yeah, forward by David Kogan, who was a writer of so many of the was that the Mysterious Traveler and shows like that. So
that's new.
Leftover from the holidays, he got away.
he's coming out of hiding.
Did you ever think an old-time radio show would become an actual menagerie?
No.
Yeah, I mean, menagerie. We got turkeys. Yeah, menagerie. All right, I mispronunciated. Anyway, we got turkeys. We've got sheep. We've got everything here.
We got screaming goats.
I got my boinger, but it's in the other room.
Wow, that'll learn you.
We need to get somebody in here to keep these animals. We need somebody in here to keep these animals in line.
A wrangler?
Oh, that'll help.
The more I ran across Tarzan, the more I was dismayed by his actual contempt of animals. I thought this guy would be like one-on-one with You're My Pal, and like there's a model with him killing a lion and
well,
you know,
a road
wrestling.
Lion, not just an ordinary lion. He had lion friends.
Right. In some instances, he could talk to gorillas. He could talk to and communicate with elephants. In others, he's like butchering the animals. It's like, figure it out, dude. What are you doing?
Well, no, come on. Well, not all lions are good. You haven't seen The Lion King? Come on.
Yeah, but you can negotiate. I mean, come on. You a little negotiation here. You know.
Not with that evil lion. He wanted to take over. I forget his name.
Snarl? Snarg? Snip? I forget what his name was.
Mr. Bean? I don't know.
Carl? I don't remember what his name was. Carl. Carl the evil lion.
Carl the evil lion. Why are you evil? Because they named me Carl.
Because they named me Carl. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And he doesn't want to end up on The Walking Dead because it would sound more like Carl.
I know. I love those jokes. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Oh, my God. I love those little memes with Coral. Coral!
I love the first, like, six seasons of that show. I have to catch up. I haven't watched the last few.
I haven't caught the end of it either. Yeah, I need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's over.
Yeah.
Or the end of it. Or the middle of it.
At least it was a planned ending, not like, all right, we're pulling the plug. You're out of dough. Beat it. Like they do to some shows.
Yeah.
I've been watching the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman. Bionic Woman, they knew that they were going to shut down. They gave her an ending. $6 Million Man, nope, just a standard.
Bye.
Standard show, and it, yeah, that was it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Later.
You got nothing.
Lost in Space,
nope.
You're done.
Yeah, Lost in Space, you know, but.
Even Star Trek,
they really
should have. It was like, done.
Oh, yeah,
still
right.
They had a five-year mission. Boom. They're still out there.
Yeah.
What was weird is following episodes of the Star Trek brand, they ran for 5 years. So they achieved what they were shooting for.
Absolutely.
But that first one.
But we're looking at the opposite end of the spectrum. Instead of shows ending, this is about shows beginning. And we have three of them tonight. Yeah. We got Gildersleeve, Dimension X, and the Damon Runyon Theater. Ooh, the first Damon Runyon Theater.
One of your
Theater.
Favorites.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Where should we start?
And that
on
Damon Runyon Theater has
and,
one of my favorite.
Yeah.
The Damon Runyon Theater has one of my favorite radio actors in it as well. Frank Lovejoy is in this episode as well.
Oh yeah, you've mentioned often that you're a fan of his work.
I am. Now here's the thing here, Gar, and this is again first episode, and this was with John Brown, but the original pilot did not have John Brown. It was a different guy, and it was nowhere near as good as what it is with John Brown.
Yeah.
That's the difference between a pilot and when it starts airing.
Is William Conrad in this? I think he is.
He may be. Let me ask you this question. What show wasn't William Conrad in?
I Dream of Jeannie. Never saw him. Dream of Jeannie. Never saw the guy.
Yeah, which is
they couldn't
well, there was
make
that
a
crossover.
Bottle big enough.
There was that crossover between I Love Jeannie, I Dream of Jeannie, and Canon, that one episode.
And Canon?
It never got repeated. It never got repeated, but there was one episode.
There's
where
a
they
rumor
shot William Conrad out of a cannon?
That's good.
The mighty big cannon you got there.
Anyway,
I think there's a rumor that William Conrad was originally the Gerber food baby. It was either
they couldn't
Gerber
find
baby.
A jar big enough.
Well, he was little then.
He's never been little.
I'm not sure he was ever little. Yeah.
Well, no. I've seen older pictures where he's not quite as portly.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the armed forces at one point.
His middle name was Barkley.
And then he ate them. He ate the third regiment. They're gone.
He had parents. Then he ate them. Yeah.
500 guys went out in the field. A big fat William Conrad comes back. I'll be damned.
William Conrad. He had a hot dog eating contest going on before it was famous. That's a, you know, I mean.
Oh.
Where shall we begin? Should we start in a lighter vein and end up darker, or vice versa?
Yes, do that. I vote for that.
Okay.
So Gildersleeve.
That's what I'm thinking. Let's go with Gildy arrives in Summerfield, the very first episode with Gildersleeve on his own.
Yep, and this was the very first situation comedy that spun off of another situation comedy. How's that?
There's another historical first on radio.
I originally ran across Great Gildersleeve 1980. It was on PBS radio. And on Sundays, I would listen to Gildersleeve. And I was like, this is amazing. I was like 15 years old. It was cool.
Yep.
When did this episode first broadcast for the very first time for Gildy?
August 31, 1941.
Hey, episode there. Number one.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. At this time, the Kraft Cheese Company presents for your enjoyment Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve, written by Leonard L. Levinson. We'll hear from the Great Gildersleeve in just a moment. But right now, here's a message of very great importance for today's menu makers. I don't know how much you housewives actually know about modern margarine, but there's probably been no time in the history of America when it was so important for you to have the true facts about nourishing, wholesome foods for your family. So I want to tell you about Parquet. Parquet is the new quality margarine made by Kraft, a delicious spread for bread, hot rolls, and toast. Now, of course, the fact that Parquet does taste so good probably accounts for its popularity as a spread in millions of homes. But this is even more important. Parquet margarine is a protective food with exceptionally high nutritional value. It is one of the best energy foods you can serve, and a reliable year-round source of vitamin A. There are 9,000 units of this vitamin in every pound of Parquet. So tomorrow, ask your food dealer for a pound of Parquet margarine made by Kraft. The whole family will like it because it tastes so good, and you'll know that you're giving them an economical, highly nutritious food made to the Kraft standards of quality. Just say Parquet, P-A-R-K-A-Y.
Made from the soup of
And now for the adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
Wistful Vista, coming into Wistful Vista.
Wistful Vista, where Fibber McGee and Molly live?
Yes, madam.
Oh, my. Do you think I'll be able to see them from the train window?
No, lady. The McGees are on their vacation.
Oh.
But say, there's a next-door neighbor of theirs, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
Where?
That portly gent with the mustache on the platform, the one making a speech to his employees.
How do you know they're his employees?
Because every time he goes away, he gives them an hour off to come down to the station and wave goodbye.
Oh, so that's Mr. Gildersleeve. Well, I never thought...
Furthermore, I can't tell you how touched I am to see all the employees of the Gildersleeve Girdle Works down here at the station to bid me goodbye. It's indeed... by the way, is there anyone left at the plant?
No.
What if some orders come in? Who'll take the phone calls?
Mert.
Oh, Mert, eh? Yeah. As I was saying while I'm away, I expect every one of you to uphold Gildersleeve Girdles to the best of your ability. And don't forget our motto. If you want the best of corsets... Of course, it's Gildersleeve.
Very good, T.P., very good.
Thank you. You'll get a raise. And though it's necessary for me to go away and attend to other enterprises, the one thing closest to my heart is the Gildersleeve girdle.
How long will you be gone, T.P.?
At least 3 days, and maybe till the end of the week.
Oh, before you go, T.P., the Gildersleeve Girdle Workers Guild wishes to present you with this handsome leather briefcase as a token of our esteem for you.
For me? I don't know what to say except... Yes, all aboard? Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Out of my way, everybody. Where are my bags?
On the train, T.P.
Thanks. I forgot to buy a ticket. Where do I buy a ticket?
On the train, T.P.
Oh, yes. Let go of me, boys. Where are you pushing me?
On the train, T.P.
Yeah. Goodbye, children. Goodbye, children.
Here's your ticket, Mr. Gildersleeve. Sorry I haven't any berths left.
Couldn't you squeeze me in somewhere?
I'll try, though it'll probably be a tight squeeze.
tight squeeze. Side-splitting, isn't it?
Going to be in Summerfield long?
Oh, no, just 3 or 4 days. I'm taking over the administration of my brother-in-law's estate. They're going to run it for my niece and nephew. But that's quite involved, and I'm hungry. Which way is the diner?
Why, an old experienced traveler like you should know where the diner is.
Huh? Oh, of course. No matter where you are, the diner's always at the other end of the train. See you later. Excuse me, madam. Yes, pretty crowded in this diner. By George, I'm so hungry I could eat the waiter.
Yes, sir?
Is it all right if I sit at this table?
Yes, sir. Sit right down, sir.
If this gentleman doesn't mind reading his paper on his own side. I said if this gentleman doesn't mind reading his paper on his own side.
Excuse me, sir. Does you mind?
Yes, I do. I'm particular whom I eat with.
You are, eh? Well, I'm not. I'm hungry. Waiter, bring me a steak. A nice, juicy, double tenderloin rare.
Waiter, where's my milk toast? I ordered it 15 minutes ago.
I'm sorry, but milk toast takes time, you know.
And waiter, I want a big, heaping plate of French fries.
Yeah, French fries.
And a cup of strong coffee with lots of cream.
Yeah, I'll get it right away, sir.
And bring me my milk toast made with gluten bread, remember?
Yes. Bread. Oh, that reminds me. Some hot biscuits and a little pot of jam.
Gluten bread toasted and a cup of hot water.
And an apple pie a la mode with cheese.
Yeah, with cheese. Yeah.
I can't stand this. Listening to you is giving me heartburn.
It is, huh? Waiter, don't forget the steak sauce, ketchup, piccalilli, and relish.
Bring me a glass of bicarbonate of soda quick.
Yes, right away, sir. I'll be back.
Of course, it's none of my business, mister.
And don't stick your nose in it.
You... Well, all right. That's the way you feel about it. I was just going to tell you you're getting your newspaper in the mustard.
I don't use mustard.
No, I guess you don't need any. But what I was going to say was...
Never mind.
Okay, I won't say it then. But that mustard from your newspaper is all over your sleeve now.
I don't care. What? Of all the messes I...
Water only spreads it. You see what I tell you?
I'll thank you to mind your own business.
What's the big idea jumping down my throat?
What do you expect, addressing a perfect stranger?
You're far from perfect, stranger. And from now on, I'm going to make a career out of ignoring you. Here comes my food. That's pretty snappy service, waiter.
Yes, sir.
Well, where's my milk toast?
Yeah, I'm sorry, sir, but the chef, he's all out of glutton bread. He wants to know, would pumpernickel do just as well?
No, pumpernickel wouldn't do just as well. And why keep me waiting all the time while you serve this big buffalo the minute he sits down?
Oop. No, look here, mister.
I don't want to look here. I'm sick of the sight of you. The idea. An overstuffed ox like you guttling and gobbling and gorging yourself like an ostrich.
Oop.
I've got a bad case of indigestion already just from looking at you.
Why, you dyspeptic little dodo. Just because you're mean to your stomach and your stomach talks back to you, you bellyache. Excuse the expression. You're not suffering from indigestion. You're just green with Epicurean envy.
I won't sit here.
Here's your bicarbonate of soda, mister.
Take it away. I need something stronger than that now. I've got some pills down here in my briefcase.
Just a minute there. What are you doing with my briefcase?
Your briefcase? This is mine.
It is not. My employees gave it to me just this afternoon.
Take your fat paws off of my briefcase before I...
Before you what, you dried-up little crabapple?
Now, wait a minute, gentlemen, please.
Let go of my briefcase.
I will not. It's mine.
Why, the idea
give
is...
Me,
oh, yes,
now,
ma'am?
Waiter, did you see anything of my briefcase? I left it... Oh, you gentlemen have it. Thank you so much.
Well, for that...
There you are, Mr. Gildersleeve. I've located a berth for you at last.
Oh, that's fine, conductor. I was getting tired of sitting around here in my pajamas. Where is it?
It's upper nine in the next car.
Upper nine? Oh, my goodness. The last time I was in an upper berth was, 50 pounds ago.
The porter's making it up for you now.
Yeah, thanks. I do hope that porter gives me a wide berth. It's so dark in here. Oh, porter! Porter!
Quiet!
Yes. Oh, excuse me. Must be sleeping. Oh, porter!
Yes, sir.
Have you got upper nine ready yet?
Yes, but I didn't anticipate no gentlemen of such ample proportions.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'd better take a ladder.
Yes, better take two. They're small.
Well, all right. Come on.
Yes. Here we are, right up there, sir.
Up there?
Mm.
Oh, my goodness. Hold these ladders steady, porter. Remember, if they tip, I won't.
Yeah, sir. Now, be careful, mister. The train's coming to a sharp curve pretty soon.
When?
Then.
Oh!
Hold on, mister. The ladder's sliding.
I can't hold on. I'm coming down. Look out below. Ooh!
No! What hit me?
Oh, my sacroiliac.
Yeah, mister, let me help you up.
I don't want to get up. I want to sleep.
Not you, mister, the man in the upper. He's now in the lower.
And where am I?
You're right here, brother.
Get off of my poor stomach. Who is it?
Oh,
it's you. What are you doing sneaking into my berth?
I'm not sneaking into your... I'm not sneaking. I'm trying to climb into bed. I'm your upstairs neighbor.
Isn't that nice? I hope that swinging shelf snaps shut on you.
Oh, yeah? If it's going to swing, I'll see that it swings your way. And if I land on you again, brother, you'll spend the rest of the night sleeping in the roadbed.
Oh, quiet. Let me go to sleep.
Okay, Grandpop. Unpleasant dreams. All right, porter. Give me a leg up again, will you? $32,473. $32,474. $32,475. Oh, my goodness. 2 o'clock already and still not a wink. Yes, $32,476. $32,478. Oh, what's the use? There was only some way of stopping that buzzsaw down there. I can't stand this any longer. Where's that porter? I'll fix this guy.
Did you call me, sir?
Yes. Would you mind getting me a drink of ice water? I can't sleep.
Yeah, sir.
Yeah.
Here's the water, mister.
Thank you. You needn't wait. Good night, good night, good night.
Good night, sir.
Yes. Now, if I can hold this cup in this hand and open the lower curtain with it... Ah, I've got it. Yeah. Steady now, Gildersleeve. Ready. Aim.
What was that? Porter! Porter! Shut this window, will you? It's raining right in on my face.
Quiet! Can a man get any rest around here?
Sir, that's Gildy. Ain't he great?
Yes.
And this is a show that I appreciated more as I got older. That and Fred Allen.
Yep.
It really was something that I didn't enjoy as much when I first started hearing it. It's just one of those shows that just truly grows on you.
There you go.
I like this episode because it's train related, and I had a bunch of early childhood train rides, and they were a lot of fun.
On actual trains?
Amtrak, yes.
Oh, Amtrak. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And then into my late teens and stuff to the point where I could drink because it was, back in the day, it was 18 years old. And I found that club car, and boy, I hung out there.
Car in the club car.
Became a member of the club car, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it made the trip go by so quickly.
Yes.
Uneventful. Bunch of drunks in the club car. My, how the time flew.
Barely remember being there.
Can't get
you guys ever been
riding
on the Amtrak?
I have. It was a terrible experience, yep. But I have, yes.
Oh, I'm
I
sorry
have
to
not.
Hear. Oh, wow.
I can't ever remember being on a big public train. Like, you know, the closest I've ever come is train rides at, like, amusement parks or there's a park system here. Oh, it's so cute. They have this where is it? It's an area called Carlisle, Dave. It's near Oberlin.
Okay.
It's like near Oberlin in the southern part of Elyria. And, oh, my gosh, when Halloween time comes, they do up the woods so nice. And they have this, like, miniature train ride. The closest thing I can think of that Dave might be able to relate to is Geauga Lake's small little kiddie train. You remember that one?
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah.
So it was along that size. So if you're an adult, you're really squatting. But they'd take you on a cruise through the woods, and you could see some of the Halloween stuff. But it was really cool, and they had all the paths and everything prepared. If you had nice weather and it wasn't wet, it was like the greatest thing. And on your way out, you passed this swamp. And the swamp is loaded with lit jack-o'-lanterns. And it looks so cool,
nice.
Reflecting off the swamp water at
yeah.
night. There's guys, they go up in there with their hip waders, and they set all these things up, I mean, right there in the middle of the swamp, on little stands or little, you know, whatever. They had them all over the place. There must have been a couple hundred pumpkins in there with lights in them, candles.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Great thing
yeah.
to take your kids to.
Yeah.
Great thing to take your kids to. Yeah. What are your parents?
I was traveling about 1,500, 2,000 miles on the train trips I was on, and it was a lot of fun. But it was a lot more social, like with you know, our now pandemic-style lifestyle thing we got going. I don't know how train travel is these days.
Yep. Bogdan was mentioning where he was at those ages. At age 18, they changed the drinking law to 19. Then when he was 19, they changed it to 21. He must have been – were you in Ohio? Because it was something like that here, wasn't it, Dave?
It was something like that here, too, yeah. Yeah, it was.
And if you weren't the right age, you could get grandfathered in.
Right. We just got grandfathered in, Dale, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just made it. But what they had in Ohio,
3-2.
To drink legal at 18, 3-2, it was called low beer in the club. It low alcoholic content because, you know, you weren't getting
all right.
high-octane triple X Molson or whatever.
Right. I think we called it something called near beer, where
near
it
beer,
was
yeah.
like beer, but it was like not.
Well, no,
yeah,
near beer doesn't have any alcohol, though.
Alcohol free.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
What's the point?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's
exactly.
What I say.
That's like to me. That's the same as non-caffeinated coffee. Why?
Why? Why? Would
Why?
You do this?
Who's that helping? Yeah. The only reason I drink this bitter thing is because of the caffeine content.
Yeah, it's one of those things like a hard liquor, like, you know, various hard liquors, like, say, scotch, for an example. It's an acquired taste, coffee. I used to hate it. And now I really love my black silk Folgers. I do. Gives me that. I've been up since 1:30, gang, okay? A.M. here, our time.
Why do you do that?
I have a dog, and it's deer season, so like they're roaming in the backyard at night, and he senses it, and he wants to go chase them. So he barks and wakes me up.
You can get some Dramamine for your dog. Put some right out.
Yeah. I ignored one of my dog's warnings once, and it cost me. I had a car stolen out of my yard, and I remember him barking, and I was like half awake, and I'm like, "Shut up, Stormy." That was my old husky.
Yeah.
Next morning, Oldsmobile was gone.
And the dog was sitting there looking at you very weirdly.
I told you, man.
For you youngins, an Oldsmobile is a car.
Yeah, it used to be.
It's like the Edsel for us. They don't make them anymore.
Right.
Darn it. But let's continue with Gildy here while we're yucking it up. Yeah. As we wrap up, Gildy arrives in Summerfield and his adventures on this train.
Good morning, sir. He's just pulling into Summerfield. You want me to brush y'all?
No, I'll walk down the steps like the rest of the passengers. By the way, Porter, you've given me such good service. Here's an order for a Gildersleeve girdle for your wife.
Thank you, sir. I happen to be a spinster at the moment. But if it's all right with you, I'll put in my hope chair.
Yes. Yes, that's perfectly all right. Summerfield, eh? By George, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing Marjorie and little Leroy again.
Why can't I, Marjorie, huh? Why can't I call them TP like they do down at this foundry?
It isn't a foundry, Leroy. It's a... Oh, never mind. It's nothing that concerns little boys. And I'm sure that he will prefer to have you call him Uncle Throckmorton.
Oh, shucks, you can't go around calling a big, tough guy who runs a steel foundry Throckmorton. It's positively degradatory.
It's derogatory.
Yes, that too.
Leroy, who told you Uncle Throckmorton was in the steel business?
Nah, you thought you were so smart. I saw one of his letterheads. The Gildersleeve Girder Company.
Hmm? Oh, yes. Gildersleeve Girder Company.
Gee, he should be here by now, shouldn't he, Marjorie?
Now, don't you worry, Leroy. Just as soon as his train arrives, Mr. Wills will bring him here for breakfast.
Oh, I wanted to go down to the station, too.
I know, but Ted has to discuss all the legal details with Uncle Throckmorton before we go to court.
Say, you're getting pretty darn stuck on that Ted guy, aren't you?
Why, Leroy Forrester, I am not. Ted Wills is merely our lawyer.
He is not. Williamson, Williams, Willies, and Wills are our lawyers, and Ted's nothing but the tail end.
Well, he's young yet. You just give him time.
Oh, there you go. Oh, say, how's if I should call him Uncle Morton?
Call who? Oh, Uncle Throckmorton. Well, I don't think he'd object to that.
Wait, I can do better than that. How's this? Uncle Mort.
Who's that?
Uncle Mort. I'll answer it.
Well, I'll bet this is little Leroy.
Hi, Uncle Mort.
Hi, who?
You, Uncle Mort. You don't mind if I call you Uncle Mort, do you, Uncle Mort?
No, not at all. Go right ahead. Uncle Mort, eh? I like that.
And this is Marjorie, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Marjorie, eh? Come here, my dear. My, how you've grown.
Hello, Uncle Throckmorton. Let me take your hat and coat. Will you have some breakfast?
No, thanks. I've already had mine on the... Well, I'll have a cup of coffee.
Sit right here, Uncle. Ted, you sit over there.
Oh, thanks.
My, this looks wonderful.
Hey, Unc, will you take me back to Wistful Vista with you and let me work in your factory?
What? Well, I didn't think you'd be interested in that sort of thing.
Now, Leroy...
Gee, I am, Uncle Mort. That must be some layout. I bet you make the supports for a lot of big projects there.
We don't turn out anything much like... We sort of confine ourselves to foundations.
Hey, I'd like to go along sometime when you install some of those foundations.
I don't have... What did you say, young man?
Oh, please excuse Leroy, Uncle Mort. He's been like that ever since he found out that you owned the Gildersleeve Girder Company.
What? Gildersleeve Girder? yes, I see it all now. Yes, a bright boy.
Gee, Unc, do you ever have to slug it out with any of them tough steel workers of yours?
No, I never do.
You don't, huh?
Of course, there have been times when I've had to put more snap into their work. Yes. Once I was so angry, I picked up a badly made foundation and bounced it right off the foreman's head.
You did?
Yeah. Oh.
Now, Leroy, let your uncle eat his breakfast.
Yeah.
Have some toast, Uncle Mort?
No, thanks. Oh, speaking of toast reminds me of an amusing incident on the train last night. You'll enjoy this, Leroy. When I went into the diner, the only empty chair was at a table with a sour little crab. And you should have heard that little rat yell when the ice water hit him in the face. Yeah.
Well, it's time we leave for court, Mr. Gildersleeve.
It is? Come on, kids. This won't take long. Well, all I can say is we run things better than this in Wistful Vista. 11 o'clock and the judge hasn't even shown up yet.
Judge Hooker's usually very prompt.
Yes, the trouble with some of these judges is they think they're little tin gods. Take those black robes away from them and what have they got? Bow legs.
Gee, that's a hot one, Uncle Mort.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it.
Everyone rise, please.
Ah, at last.
Superior Court, Department 25, the Honorable Hitler Head Hooker Judge for Styling is now in session. Be seated.
Sit down, Uncle Mort.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Who's that man sitting in the judge's chair?
Why, that's Judge Hooker.
Judge Hooker? That's the man in the lower berth.
Gildersleeve for appointment as Administrator of the State of Ray Forrester.
Oh, that's us. Come on, Mr. Gildersleeve.
I'm not feeling very well, Ted. Couldn't we postpone this over to another judge?
Oh, come on, Uncle Mort. Remember what you said. This guy will be a pushover.
Yes, a pushover.
Now, come on. Step up. Don't dawdle. I haven't got all day.
Make a snappy, folks. The judge is pretty short-tempered this morning. He didn't get any sleep last night.
Oh, my.
Your Honor, with your permission, I'll put Mr. Gildersleeve on the stand first.
Go ahead, Mr. Wills. Swear in the witness booth.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, help you?
I do.
Well, do you or don't you speak up?
I do.
That voice is very familiar. Turn around, Mr. Oh, so it's you.
Yes. Hello, Judge.
Mr. Wills.
Yes, Your Honor.
I will examine this man's qualifications, if you don't mind.
I don't, Your Honor.
But I do.
Silence. Now then, Gildersleeve, what do you do for a living?
I make girdles, Your Honor.
Order in the court. Order in the court. Order in the court. Order.
Order.
And you, Gildersleeve, any more cheap humor and I'll judge you in contempt.
But it's true, Your Honor. I'm the president of the Gildersleeve Girdle Company.
Oh, Uncle Mort, tell him the truth. He doesn't make girdles, Judge.
Yes. And what does he do?
Steel foundations.
I bet he would, too. Now, no more interruptions, my boy. Remember, this is a courtroom. You realize who I am, of course.
Sure, you're a bow-legged little tin god.
Yes.
What?
Now, Leroy!
But you just said so yourself, Uncle Mort.
Oh, you did.
Just a little joke, Your Honor. You know how I kid.
I know. Well, I'm going to ask you a plain question, and I want a plain answer. What business are you in?
Well, I... Oh, that is, Leroy, would you mind going out into the hall and get me some ice water?
One moment. Who's running this court, you or I?
Better not get Uncle Mort mad, Judge. Last night he threw a whole bucket of water on a guy in the berth under him.
Oh, my, here we go again.
He did, did he?
Yeah, and this poor sap woke up and thought it was raining.
Oh.
You ought to hear Uncle Mort tell him.
Thanks, I will. Let's hear all about it, Uncle Mort.
But, Judge Hooker, it's after 5 o'clock. This poor man's been on the witness stand all day.
All right. One more question, then I'll hand down my decision. Mr. Gildersleeve, what makes you think that you have executive ability?
Well, I have a large staff of my own, and through years of experience, I know the proper relationship between employer and employee.
Your Honor.
Yes, Mr. Wells?
Our firm has thoroughly investigated Mr. Gildersleeve, and we're satisfied as to his qualifications.
Mr. Wells, I have great respect for you and your associates. That is probably the only reason why I'm going to grant your petition.
Hooray!
However, in order to protect these children from their own misguided enthusiasm, I'm going to require this Gildersleeve to report to me every single week.
But, Your Honor...
He must get an okay for every cent that he spends.
But, Judge...
And I will require him to post a bond of $50,000 in cash.
Now, see here, Hooker. I won't stand for this. I'll resign.
Quiet. Gildersleeve, I never sent for you. You came here begging for this job. To quote from Brawby versus Union Buggy Corporation, Civil Code of Nebraska, you made your bed and you can't lie out of it.
But my business in Wistful Vista.
You remain here and make this estate pay or go to jail for contempt.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not going to...
Court is adjourned.
I'll kill that old goat. Ted, we've got to do something about this. Do you realize that a $50,000 bond would not only take every cent of my ready cash, but also means a mortgage on my Gordle Works?
Gee, I'm sorry about how the whole thing went, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, maybe if we went into the judge's chambers, we could persuade him to lower the bond, Uncle Mort.
Sure, just let me talk to him.
Young man, you've talked enough for one day.
Well, how about it, Ted?
Well, it won't hurt to try. Come on.
Yeah.
Come in.
Excuse us, Judge Hooker. You remember me, don't you? I thought perhaps maybe we could possibly get that little cash bond reduced.
I don't see why I should have...
If you spoke to somebody who'd known me for a long time, they might convince you that I'm not such a bad fellow.
Oh, that would be fine, Uncle Mort. Who could the judge talk to?
Why, the president of the Wistful Vista Chamber of Commerce. He's my next-door neighbor, too. That chap named Fibber McGee. We can call him long distance, Your Honor.
Yes, yes, I see, Mr. McGee. Yes, I'm glad you put me straight on that.
Yes, I knew my little chum would set me in right.
That's a very good point.
Leroy, I want you to meet McGee one of these days. There's one of nature's noblemen.
I guess you've made up my mind for me, Fibber.
Fibber.
Hold the phone a second, I'll tell him. Gildersleeve.
Yes, Judge?
Gildersleeve, I've decided to rescind that $50,000 bond.
I knew that would happen if you spoke to my little pal.
Yes, after talking to McGee, I'm going to make that bond $100,000.
What? Give me that telephone. Hello? You're a hard man, McGee.
The great Gildersleeve will be with us again in a few minutes. While Uncle Throck recovers from that one, I want to say a word that I believe will make every thinking housewife want to try parquet margarine tomorrow. This delicious new Kraft product is most popular as a spread for bread and a seasoning for hot cooked foods because of its delicate, pleasing flavor. But the same qualities that make it so good for table use make it an extra fine shortening for baking. I say extra fine because it has all the qualities of an ordinary shortening, plus fine flavor and added nourishment. Let me read you a statement from Mrs. Lillian Watts, who, having been born and raised on a farm, is mighty particular about food. She says, quote, I have a family of eight, and they all like parquet margarine. I use it in various ways. Cakes, bread, muffins, biscuits, soup, spreads, and other ways too numerous to mention. Thank you 1,000 times for this wonderful product. End of quote. Now, that's a mighty enthusiastic statement. But you'll be just as enthusiastic once you have tried parquet. It's so delicious, so nourishing, so grand in every way. Tomorrow, be sure to order Parquet, the economical spread made by Kraft. And remember, every pound of Parquet margarine contains 9,000 units of vitamin A.
George Leroy, I'm going to show that judge I can run that estate, or my name won't be Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
You bet it won't, Uncle Mort. You won't even have a name.
Yeah, no. I'll just have a number. Good night, folks.
Ain't one.
Eerie House Radio.
Ain't one. Ain't one.
Does not have a moral story. And here it isn't. There.
But what we do have, Dale.
Was that a good have? Out? Did I escape that well?
It was a great out. What we do have, Dale, is, as you recall, last week we were listening from you, Molly. We had to cut it short. Well, it seems like there was only like 35 seconds of story left. I cut that off so we can find out why exactly Fibber had the string tied around his finger. He was going all around the town doing all these things because he forgot why he did it. So here is that last 35 seconds.
I told you you were too tired, McGee.
Imagine old Doc flying off the handle like that, though, just because I forgot to pay his meals. I wonder if that's what I was supposed to remember.
No.
Huh?
I said, no, it wasn't.
How do you know what
Look,
I...
Look, dearie, I've got a confession to make.
Huh?
I tied that ribbon on your finger last night while you were asleep.
You did? But what for?
Because there was something I wanted you to do for me today.
Well, for the... What did you want me to do?
I can't remember.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
There we go. That's what you missed last week. So. Oh.
Just keeping car on its toes.
Oh, no.
That's what we're doing.
Oh, no. Somebody get that guy some cough syrup.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
That sounds painful.
Always like that one.
Jesus was that?
From Frankenstein. You don't remember? Alive! Frankenstein.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound like Colin Clive.
It was
well, he might have had some helium, you know. I don't know.
Ha 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 You better get the next show going.
This is like a war. Yeah,
it's stuck. It's like, stuck.
Welcome to an hour of animals bleeding, whinnying, mooing, and et cetera.
And
no.
Screaming.
And screaming. And screaming.
Yeah.
In the night. No, we got more first run shows of old time radio. The next one, a little on the humorous side, I would imagine, if it's
the
Damon Runyon Theater I'm thinking of. And it's an episode called Tobias the Terrible.
Yep.
Yes.
Gar has an actual date for this one.
I do. It took a little digging, but I got one. There it is. January 2nd, 1949. From a source called OTRsite.com.
I like chicken just worked his way right in there. How about that?
Everyone knows Broadway is in New York. The Broadway, that is. It has a dozen aliases. But whether it's called the Big Drag, the Gay White Way, or just the Street, it means that bustling stretch of Midtown Manhattan that is at once garish or beautiful, hard-hearted or soft-hearted, cynical or naive, depending on how you look at it or feel about it. To some people, it can be all those at the same time. One of those people was Damon Runyon. Damon Runyon, one of America's greatest storytellers, knew people and loved them. And because he did, people loved him. Damon Runyon told his stories through the eyes and mouth of a character who seems to have no name. We call him Broadway because Broadway seems to be his only home. And he is satisfied with it and happy. He knows all the guys and dolls, and they know him. How Broadway makes a living is a mystery, and one we'd rather not solve. We accept him, and because we do, we accept his stories as truth. Anyway, here is Broadway.
Thanks. One night, I am sitting in Mindy's restaurant on Broadway, partaking heartily of some Hungarian goulash, which comes very nice in Mindy's, when in pops a guy who is a stranger to me and sits down at my table. In short, I do not know this guy. But it turns out later that we are all calling him Tobias the Terrible. And how that comes about is quite a story, which I will tell in a minute.
And now back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, Tobias the Terrible.
As I am saying, I am partaking of Mindy's Hungarian goulash when in pops a guy who is a stranger to me and sits down at my table. I do not pay any attention to the guy as I am busy looking over the next day's entries at Laurel. But I hear him tell the waiter to bring him some goulash, too. By and by, I hear the guy making a strange noise. I look over my paper and see that he is crying. He is a very little guy, maybe a shade over 5 feet tall, and weighing maybe as much as a dime's worth of liver, and he has pale blonde hair and a very sad look in his eyes. And from his looks, I can see that this guy does not belong in these parts. Well, I watch him cry for a spell, and naturally, I am very curious as to why he is crying. So I ask, you will pardon me, but why are you crying? Perhaps it is because you have a tough day at the track?
No.
You do not look like a horse player.
I'm not.
You do not look like a person from these parts.
No, I'm not.
Then if you are crying about the goulash, you better dry your tears before the chef sees you, because the chef is very sensitive and may take your tears as criticism.
The goulash is wonderful.
You need not be enthusiastic. It is just good.
If I am bothering you, I will move away.
You are not bothering me. But why you are crying is...
Are you ever in love?
I have never. And barring a bad break, I never expect to be.
If you were acquainted with Miss Deborah Weems, you wouldn't speak that way.
I am not acquainted with Miss Deborah Weems, probably because I do not know her.
She... We...
With that, the little guy goes back to crying. And it touches my heart, because I am convinced he is leveling with the tears. Now, I have a naturally sympathetic heart for anybody, as long as it does not extend to a touch for a fin, or even a less amount. So I get this little guy to tell me his name, which is Tobias Tweeney. This is an odd name, but it belongs to an odd character, so I lets it pass. He tells me the whole story, which is as follows.
My home is in Erasmus, Pennsylvania. Do you know where that is?
If it is not within a stone's throw from where we are, I do not.
Well, I am in love with Deborah Weems, who was in love with me until she changed her mind.
What occasions this chill?
What?
Why is she not in love with you anymore?
She thinks I'm not tough enough.
Why does she not see this at first? You do not look like you are ever dangerous.
I'm not. That's the trouble, Mr... Mr...
You may call me Broadway.
Well, Mr. Broadway, Deborah goes to the movies, and she has seen tough guys, and she has made up her mind that they are her ideals. To make things worse, there is a Joe Trivett in Erasmus who claims he once shook hands with a gangster.
That is dangerous work.
I don't believe him. I told him so.
What happens?
I...
Look, why don't you go back to Erasmus and punch this Joe Trivett?
That is what happened.
You punches him?
No.
No?
The reason I don't is because he has the idea first and punched me. That is when Deborah called off our wedding. She called me a rabbit.
Personally, I can see that this Miss Deborah Weems has got a point. But I do not mention it to Tobias. I wait for him to stop crying. And he goes on as follows.
So I left town. I drew $200 out of the Erasmus Bank and came here.
Why?
Oh, I figure that if I can meet up with some real underworld characters, I can go back to Erasmus and make Joe Trivett look sick. Do you know any underworld characters?
I do not know any such characters. And if I do, I am not going to talk about them.
I have not yet met any tough characters, and until I do, I can't go back to Erasmus. If I could just go to a tough joint and see some characters, I could go back to Erasmus. Do you know a place you can take me?
Well, your story touches me. I will take you to such a place. Well, it is maybe a couple of minutes later that Tobias Tweeney and I are in a taxi cab going up Broadway. Tobias is all eyes, which makes him look like quite a large rabbit by now. He turns to me and says as follows.
Golly, Mr. Broadway, this is nice of you. If I hadn't met you, I would never meet any underworld characters.
Yes. Look, Tobias... If we should run into some citizens who are, not exactly your idea of a Boy Scout, I want you should not mention it.
You mean they might kill us?
I am crossing my fingers against such a happen.
Gee, look at all the lights.
Uh-huh. Do you not have lights in Erasmus?
We turn them out at 10 o'clock.
Well, how does one find one's way around the town?
It's not a very large town. It is not large enough for me and Joe Trivett.
I see.
Well, maybe you will point out some of the sights for me as we go along. I see most of them by day, but I do not recognize them.
Tobias, you have nothing on me. I do not recognize them in the day either.
Gee, I can hardly wait until I tell Deborah that I am out with a character.
So I take Tobias Tweeney to Good Time Charlie's place, which is not a joint, but I figure Tobias will not know the difference. But the moment we go through the door, I am sorry, because who is present but a dozen citizens from different parts of the city, and none of these are a bargain at any time. But I take Tobias around and introduce him. Tobias, meet Harry the Horse.
Gee, you ain't growed much, have you?
And this is Angie the Ox.
Where did you get this, Broadway?
Angie the Ox?
You don't like the name, Tobias?
Oh, it's wonderful.
And this is Little Mitzi.
Hiya, Tobias.
So I introduce Tobias all around, and his eyes are growing like saucers. I tell his story, and when I do, Tobias starts crying again. and it affects little Mitzi, who is just tossed around himself more than somewhat by a doll. Little Mitzi says to Tobias,
I never hear of such an outrage in my life. If I have time, I will go back to the town with you and make this Joe Trivet hard to catch. Furthermore, I will give this Deborah Weems a piece of my mind.
Yeah, that's right. See, Broadway.
Yeah, Angie?
You see, you bring him here to meet some underworld characters?
Well, yes, that is what I say.
Are you expecting to find them here?
Well,
I wonder if we can get in touch with anyone who knows such characters and can arrange to have Mr. Tweeny meet them. Although, personally, I loathe and despise characters of this nature. Hey, you guys, we got to talk this over. Come on. Yeah, we got to help this.
Now, all this is very odd, especially since Little Mitzi himself is a character who the police dislike intensely. In fact, so much so that they are willing to give him a vacation on citizens' money. It is likewise with Harry the Horse, Angie the Ox, and the others. But I say nothing, which is very smart, not only now, but at any time. Anyway, they are talking this over. And while they are, I see that Tobias Tweeny is asleep. It being after 3 a.m. in the morning, he is done in. He is still asleep in a chair when Good Time Charlie comes hurrying in.
Hey, you guys. Harrigan's outside.
Harrigan?
Harrigan? Harrigan.
I believe that is his name, and he is still a lieutenant in the police force, and he is in company with others of his ilk.
A raid.
And I am carrying a rod, which is awkward, because it'll be tough on anybody who owes the state some time. And I seem to remember owing some.
The police are back and front.
Can you hold them off, Charlie?
I will stall, Mitzi, but Harrigan is a very determined man.
You will stall until we can get rid of our guns.
Yeah, all right. But you will please make it very fast, or Lieutenant Harrigan will take nothing to come through the door without opening it first. You will make it snappy, boy.
I am uncomfortable, naturally. But the rest are even more so, especially since being caught with a Roscoe means large portions of grief. But there is no place to chuck the irons, there being an even dozen of said weapons. And then Angie looks up and points to Tobias and says...
Him, that Tobias character.
What about him, Angie?
Harry, now I ask you, does he look like a hardened character?
He looks like nothing. But I do not see the reasons for this discussion at the present time.
Look, we put our guns on him.
Angie, you are a genius.
Yeah.
Mitzi, I thank you. All right. Load him up with rods.
I put my rod in his pocket.
Stick this in his waistband.
Well, they all stowed their guns on Tobias, who is so sleepy he just mumbles as they tuck the irons on his frame and in his clothes. When they finish, Angie looks at him and says,
There, Harrigan will never find him. Who would think of looking for a gun on him?
Listen.
That, I believe, is Harrigan and his gendarmes.
We will sit down and look innocent. Shh, shh.
Well, well, well. Good morning, boys. What a nice gathering we have here.
What, if I may be so bold, brings you out on such a night, Lieutenant Harrigan?
I am restless at night, Harry, and I'm looking for company. Who's that?
That is a friend of mine, Lieutenant Harrigan. By name, he is Tobias Tweeny.
That an alias, Broadway?
It is his given name.
Where is he from? He doesn't look like a local character.
He is from Erasmus, Pennsylvania.
What is he doing here?
I bring him here.
What for?
For a cup of coffee.
I see. It didn't keep him awake.
He is not used to late hours.
Okay. All right, the rest of you, line up for a frisk.
A frisk? You are going to search us? Why?
I am playing Roscoe, who's got the Roscoe. And if I find one, I will be very happy to recommend a sentence. I think I will find one.
You mean you think we are carrying concealed weapons?
Just line up. Not you, Broadway. I know you're clear. Okay, let's take you first, Angie. Hold him high, way up, like a good boy.
Well, anything to oblige, Lieutenant.
The rest of you face the wall and keep your noses against it.
Well, how's that, Lieutenant?
You're clean, but I don't get it. All right, Harry, you're next. Hold him higher.
I am troubled with a sore shoulder, which prevents me from obliging you to the limit
Skip
of
it.
My... You, are unable to find anything, Lieutenant?
Don't you feel undressed without that Roscoe, Harry?
It is a comfortable feeling.
Mitzi.
I am ready for this indignity.
Yeah.
You are a very suspicious man, Lieutenant Harrigan. You should learn to trust your fellow men.
My fellow men I do trust. You're not in that class. Okay, you're clear.
That I could have informed you of before proceedings began.
I don't like the smell of this.
You could leave.
Shut up. Okay, the rest of you.
Well, Harrigan and his men make the frisk, but good. But there is nothing. Not a single rod, no place. And not once do Harrigan and his gendarmes look at Tobias Tweeney, who is still deep in dreams. Then Harrigan finishes, and the look on his face is very odd when he says as follows.
I find this very curious, very peculiar.
It could be that you are given a bum steer, Lieutenant.
That could be, Angie, and it's lucky for you it is a bum one.
I am going to see my alderman. I am a citizen, and I got rights as such.
Harry, you are not a good citizen.
But I got no gun.
That is correct, and I'm puzzled. All right, boys, let's go.
Harrigan and his boys are just about to the door, and one and all are breathing again when...
Wait a minute, what the... Holy mackerel.
For a minute, there is no sound, because nobody is able to make one. We are all looking at Tobias Tweeney, who falls off his chair and lands on the floor, the 12 guns sliding every which way on the floor. Harrigan's eyes are popping a foot. When he gets back his voice and yells,
grab that guy, boys. Grab him before he gets his hands on one of those rods. I've seen a two, even a three-gun man before. But so help me, this is the first time I ever see a 12-gun character. Hey, you, wake up. Wake up, hear me?
Deborah, is that you?
Tobias the Terrible. There's some great voices in this. I'm hearing Alan Reed.
I heard Alan Reed in there, yeah.
William Conrad. Yep. Sheldon Leonard. Could be in it. He was in the show.
Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah.
Ernest Borgnine. He was in there three times.
And his cousin. And his cousin, yeah.
And his cousin.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's Jerry Borgtown.
Yes. Borgtown. What ethnicity is the Damon Runyon character supposed to be?
New York.
New York.
Irish?
Bronx characters.
Mm-hmm.
But like Irish New York? What are we? I don't know what we're. I was trying to feel that out. I couldn't get it.
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. You never know by their names because. Of their ethnicity, because of their names are all pseudonyms. They're not really their names. Broadway is not really Broadway's name and stuff. So.
Right. I put it in the chat there. Harry the Horse, Dave the Dude, Sorrowful Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. A whole bunch of different names.
So. We got a lot of radio, so we're gonna roll.
We got
right
a lot of radio.
Yeah, we're gonna roll right into part two of Tobias the Terrible.
We're
find out what
in
happens.
Some circle.
What happens to this poor wimpy kid? Terrible.
And now back to the second act of the Damon Runyon Theater and our story, Tobias the Terrible.
So, that is that. Tobias Tweeney is picked up off the floor with 10 gendarmes grabbing parts of him. The next day, the newspapers are full of the capture of a guy they call 12-Gun Tweeney.
The papers give it a big play, and Harrigan gives out a statement that says 12-Gun Tweeny is a bloodthirsty guy because he says nothing whatsoever, but only glares at them with a steely glint in his eyes. Although, of course, the reason Tobias stares at him is because he is too dumbfounded to think of anything to say. Well, I naturally expect that when Tobias figures this out, he will spill the whole business. And all the parties who are in good time Charlie's when he is arrested think the same way and go into retirement for a time. But it seems that when Tobias finally realizes what is the score, he is getting so much attention that it swells him all up, and he decides to go on being 12-Gun Tweeny as long as he can, which is a nice break for all other parties concerned. So I sneak down to Judge Raskova's court the day Tobias is arraigned. The courtroom is packed with citizens eager to see this desperate character. The citizens are milling and pushing around, and there is much talk, which I hear as I push to the front.
Well, guns he had on him. He's probably responsible for several revolutions.
I think you're meeting him when he was in a bad use.
Lieutenant Harrigan took a chance in nailing this town.
Yes. This guy's
got 20 years.
Maybe 50. They say he's a big guy, maybe close to 7 feet tall.
Well, I listen to all this and wonder what is going to happen when said citizens get a look at Tobias Tweeny. Then he is brought in.
There he comes!
Don't stand too close.
Maybe he still got a couple of guns they didn't find.
A dead hush falls when they see Tobias. Tobias is smaller than usual. He is some heads under the shortest citizen in the courtroom, and his rabbit face is quivering. But he stands there as proceedings go on as follows.
You will please rise.
In comes Judge Raskova, who takes his place on the bench.
Good morning.
Good morning, Judge.
Good morning, Judge.
The judge adjusts his glasses and looks down and says...
Where is the prisoner?
This is Tobias Tweeny, Your Honor.
Where, Lieutenant Harrigan?
Here, Your Honor.
That is the prisoner?
Yes, Your Honor.
Just a moment. I think my glasses are steamed up. And now, did you bring in the right prisoner?
This is Tobias Tweeny, Your Honor.
You mean to tell this court that this half-portion is the desperate 12-gun Tweeny?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Tweeny, are you Tobias Tweeny?
I'm 12-gun Tweeny.
Just a moment, Lieutenant Harrigan, come up here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you sure you found 12 guns on this man?
I did, sir.
Are the guns in this courtroom?
On the table, Your Honor.
Good. I wish to see just how he was carrying them. Please put them on him.
Yes, Your Honor. Mulligan, Schwartz, give me a hand.
Well, Harrigan and his boys puts the guns on Tweeny. In his side pockets, one in each hip pocket, one in his waistband, one in each pants pocket, and so forth, until finally Harrigan says to the judge...
That's it, Your Honor.
Mr. Tweeny.
Yes, Your Honor.
A step closer to the bench. I wish to see for myself just what kind of a villain you are.
Well, go on, Tweeny, step up. Tweeny, his honor said step up.
Well, we stand there and watch Tweeny. He does not move. It is like he is rooted to the spot. And I figure that now he is scared and wishes he is back in Erasmus. And then, while we watch, he takes a step and it is like he is pulling his foot out of a puddle of tar. And then...
Order! Order! Order in this court! Order!
Now I see what happens. Tobias does not fall off the chair in good time Charlie's place. He is just naturally top-heavy from all the guns. And it is the same here. He is not able to walk under the load, and he topples forward on his face. While everybody is trying to get a look, a young doll rushes out of the crowd, and the scene is as follows.
Tobias, my darling.
Deborah.
Hobie, darling, I love you. I did not realize this until we saw the New York papers in Erasmus.
Deborah, you love me.
Oh, Toby, you are wonderful. Kiss me, Toby.
Order! There will be order in this court, or I will clear it. Young lady, who are you?
I am his sweetheart. I love him.
So I see.
You may sentence him to prison, but I will be waiting for him when he gets out, even though it may be 6 months.
You live in Erasmus, young lady?
All my life.
And Mr. Tweeney, have you known him all your life?
Since we were children.
Mr. Tweeney.
Yes, Your Honor.
How long have you been in New York?
4 days.
4 days? All this trouble in only 4 days?
Yes, sir.
young lady, what does Mr. Tweeney do for a living in Erasmus?
He is a very good shoe salesman.
Quiet! Order in the court! I see. Mr. Tweeney, young lady, I should like to see both of you in my chambers immediately. And Lieutenant Harrigan?
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
It would be very nice if you came along. We can then discuss the case of 12-gun Tweeney at some length.
Yes, sir.
Court's adjourned.
Well, Judge Raskova, being quite a slick codger, he has it all figured out. And it is figured out along the right lines, which makes Lieutenant Harrigan uncomfortable, and also some other characters whose names you know. They are forced to stay undercover. Well, Tobias Tweeney and Deborah Weems go back to Erasmus, and it is not until a month later that I hear the payoff, which I will tell you in a minute. Off comes one night when I am sitting in Mindy's, partaking of a light snack, and Harry the horse and little Mitzi come in and sit alongside me, which makes me uncomfortable. Harry the horse looks at me for a minute and then speaks as follows.
Hello, Broadway.
Hello, Harry.
Hello, Broadway.
Hello, little Mitzi.
Broadway, we ought to be mad at you.
Harry is right, Broadway. Very mad.
Well, why?
It is like this. You bring that Tobias Tweeney around and we are all in trouble when the thing is over.
It is not me who puts the guns on him.
No, but we are not mad at you.
I am happy about that, Mitzi.
You see, Broadway, we are at Good Time Charlie's that night having a peace meeting with Angie the Ox and his boy.
And we learned something very interesting.
Yeah.
Such as what?
Such as the fact that Angie the Ox and his boys are carrying guns which we agree not to carry, since this is a peace meeting.
Yes.
Well, I see, but your guns...
That is besides the point.
Yes.
Broadway, we now know who our friends are. It seems we cannot trust Angie the Ox and his boys.
Also, we are very mad at Tobias Tweeney, who is your friend.
I renounce him as such. Stop him now.
He is an ingrate. We make it possible for him to marry this doll Deborah, which he does.
We make it possible for him to have such a tough reputation that he is elected constable of Erasmus. We make it possible for him as constable to run Joe Trivet from the town.
So, we think maybe we are able to hide out in Erasmus until this blows over.
But he is an ingrate. We go to see him, and you know what happens?
Oh, no, I do not know. What?
He fines us $50 apiece for carrying concealed weapons.
And so ends the saga of Tobias the Terrible, another famous Damon Runyon story. Listen in again next week for... The Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville. And the stories are adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
Dave, you're right. No one could do Broadway like you.
Like John Brown.
John Brown.
And Mayfair, that's the production department that made Alan Ladd's Box 13, and he was part of that production company as well. So syndicated, like this may have been.
I'm going to try again.
Uh-oh.
Hope. Proudly resents cars. Moral of the story? Maybe.
When things appear not as they seem, more than that, things are not as they seem. There you go.
I found my turkey soundbite. Yeah, now that last segment was not too lengthy. We're doing good on time, fellas. We're doing good on time.
Good.
At the moment, but that can get out of control at any minute.
Yeah, we can't get out of control, but yes, for the moment, we're not in too bald a shape because we do want to get the entire episode as we head into science fiction.
Oh yeah, we're not cutting 35 seconds of this bad boy from Dimension X.
Nope.
You guys ever been to New York?
No.
I have never been there. New York City.
I've
been to upstate New York.
Don't want.
I've been to New York City. And to the other end there, where I lived in Buffalo, Western New York, yeah.
I was in upstate New York for a while. Very pleasant. Very small community. It was very nice.
I've been downwind of Parma.
Parma!
Yeah. How did that work out?
Oh, the air was loaded with kielbasa over there in Parma.
That's better than blue.
There we go.
Some traditions are hard to kill.
Yep.
And so is up kielbasa. Take it out.
I love the title of this upcoming episode. Someone stole the kishka. It's not someone stole the kishka.
I don't know if someone stole the kishka.
Someone call a cop to dunk. There we go. Round and firm and fully packed. It was hanging on the rack. All right. We do need to get to this one. Outer Limit.
Yes. Very first episode of Dimension XXXXX.
Yes.
X.
Not to be confused with the Outer Limits, the TV show didn't hit until 63. And
right.
This comes to us in 1950, so a little bit earlier.
And who knows if that title wasn't inspired by that, because I've heard the Outer Limit referenced more in films of the period. Like not just the TV show and not just this episode of Dimension X, which I have heard before. This is going to be good.
Good story. Uh-huh.
Yep. So let's get to part one of Dimension X.
Go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to segue into, but you're ready to roll.
Yes, original air date, April 8th, 1950.
Episode number one.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense. Dimension X. Can you predict what will come in 100 years? Or in 10? Or
yes.
In the next minute? Some people think they can. Nuclear scientists, mathematicians, astronomers, biologists. They'll predict the shape of the future. Why?
Psychics.
Because they make the future. Because they see beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown, Dimension X. We go ahead now in time to 1965. We're on a vast concrete runway set in the desert of the Southwest,
a giant metal ship stands before us, prow pointed for the stars. And in 5 minutes, the signal will flash, and it will tear up through the atmosphere to the outer limit.
Attention. Attention. Clear field for takeoff. Clear field.
5 minutes, Steve.
For all right. Takeoff.
Whatever up, Charlie.
And they're over.
I want to go over procedure again, Steve.
Don't worry, I got it straight.
You just make sure.
Okay. I take her up on jets to 50,000, then I cut in the rockets.
No lower, or your tail blast will burn out 3 counties.
I climb 4 minutes on rockets, then start maneuver tests.
Remember that, no more than 4 minutes.
Right.
This ship isn't like those strato rockets you've been testing. She's the first one built for outer space. If she works, she can go clear to the moon.
If I'd have known that, I'd have brought my toothbrush.
Well, not this trip. Now, get this, Steve. You've got power there to clear the Earth's gravitational field. But remember, after you cut in the rockets, you've only got 10 minutes fuel. If you go beyond the outer limit and don't save fuel for the return...
I know, I won't get down again.
That's right, Steve. You'll drift off into space. Get that now. 10 minutes fuel.
Gotcha.
As far as I'm concerned, this project is a lot more important than that cosmic ray bomb they're testing out in the Pacific tonight.
Well, the Security Commission brass doesn't think so. I don't see any undersecretaries under anything.
Don't worry. In the long run, our ship will make the CR bomb back page stuff. But in the meantime, it's just as dangerous. Remember, half the principles in this ship are pure theory, Steve. Slide rule stuff. If anything goes wrong, we may have to scrape you off the landscape with a soup spoon.
You have a charming sense of humor.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. We're risking your neck in this test. If anything blows, we don't want to have the next man pull the same boner.
I know, Hank.
So keep your mic open and keep talking. If anything goes wrong, we want to know exactly why. And we won't be able to ask you. Let us know before you pull every switch. Before you do anything. You got that?
Yeah.
Even if you only have to blow your nose.
All right, get those fuel lines away.
Okay, Mr. Crow.
Well, I guess that's about all, Steve.
Hey, that reminds me. Look, if Mary calls, I'm just up on a milk run. I didn't tell her today was it.
How is she?
She's okay, but she's due about now, and I don't want her to be nervous.
Hey, I didn't know the baby was that close.
Yeah?
Steve, I really ought to be sending a single man on this job.
What, and cut me out of a soft paycheck? Forget it, Hank. You know you can't get anybody else who can take 15 G's acceleration when those rockets cut in.
Yeah, I know. It's time, Steve.
Yeah. Well, see you later. Don't worry, Hank. I'll sweat for both of us.
Button her up, Charlie. So long, Hank.
So long. We'll give you the light from control. Okay, Steve. Got you on the speaker. I'm ready to go.
Mr. Hanson.
Ready on radar, Sergeant?
Check. Mr. Hanson, you better see this.
What is it, Elsa?
Message center for Steve. Mrs. Weston just left for the hospital.
What? Hello, Steve.
Yeah.
Stand by a minute.
Shall we hold the takeoff, Mr. Hanson?
What? Oh, yes. No, wait just a minute. It's too late now.
You going to tell him?
Maybe he's got enough to worry about.
Hey, what's holding us up, Hank? Something on your mind?
No, it's nothing, Steve. I just wanted to say good luck. Clear for takeoff, Charlie?
Right.
Okay, give him the light. All right, Steve, I'm reading you clear.
I'm at 40,000. Airspeed 600. She's running fine. Soundproofing works. Third-degree waver in the AGY pressure.
Got that, Charlie?
Check. Dead center on radar, Mr. Hanson.
50,000 now. Cutting out the port jet. Now to starboard. I'm off jets. Airspeed dropping. Opening the rocket flex. Switch sticks a little, Charlie. Oxy out to all pressure, 350. All right, now I'm advancing the ignition key. There goes rocket one.
Steve, you all right?
Yeah. Looks like somebody slugged me with a sledgehammer. Airspeed now, 1,200. Here goes number two.
collapsed rocket time is now 4 minutes. What's your altitude? Over to you.
Speed 4,400. Still climbing. Altitude 297 miles.
All right, you're at the outer limit. Level off for maneuver test. You've got exactly 6 minutes fuel left.
Okay. Starting a 3-degree left bank. It's a little sluggish. Yeah, it's all right now. There's a low vibration someplace. Maybe the cockpit hatch. Now I'm straightening out.
5 minutes fuel left.
Now I'm starting a 3-degree... Hey!
What's the matter? What's wrong?
There's something up here. Something shining.
What are you talking about?
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
Steve, you're at the outer limit now.
I can see it plain now.
Steve, don't go any higher. You've only got 4 minutes left. You've only got...
Getting static. I can't hear you, Hank. It's dead ahead now. I'm going to make a pass at it. Get a good look. Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. It's dead ahead.
Hello. Hello. Hello, Steve. Steve, come in.
9 minutes. Fuel gone.
Still no sign on radar.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Steve, what's happened? Charlie, get out the crash squad. Tell the Army squadron to alert their search planes.
Right.
9.5 minutes
crash
gone.
Squadron.
Hello. Hello, Steve. What's happened? Where the devil is it?
Charlie,
hello.
For Mr. Hansen.
Come in, Steve.
We need a search squadron.
Come in.
No, Mr. Hansen's busy.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Hello, Steve.
10 minutes.
Steve, it's not funny.
It's the end of this fuel.
How long has it been now?
10 hours, Mr. Hansen.
Nothing more on radar, Sergeant?
Screen's blank.
Colonel Corelli called in. Search planes are back. He didn't find anything.
Should be some trace.
He couldn't have bailed out, could he?
You don't hit the silk at 4,400 miles an hour. Either went past the outer limit, ran out of fuel. Something blew, and we'll find the pieces scattered from here to the coast. Why does it have to be the best man? Always the best man.
I'll get it.
Charlie, we've got to figure out what was wrong.
Yes. All right, I'll tell you.
Something must have blown.
Mr. Hansen,
right? Yeah.
There's a message from Northside Hospital for Steve.
Well, what is it?
Mrs. Weston's fine. It's a boy.
Thank you, Elsie. It's a boy, Charlie.
Oh.
Fine. It's a boy. He didn't even know she went to the hospital. How am I going to tell Mary that?
Wasn't your fault, Mr. Hansen? Ship had to be tested.
Yeah, we'll build another one, and some other flying fool will shoot past the outer limit into space. Oh, I'm getting old, Charlie. You can remember when I used to take him up myself. Now I've got to send other men.
It's a job, Mr. Hansen.
Now I'm afraid. Every time I hear a jet go off, I jump. Every time I have to send someone up in a new model, I start to sweat.
Mr. Hansen?
Yeah?
I think there's something on the radar.
No flights scheduled in either, Elsie.
We have the whole day cleared.
It's coming in behind us. Here it comes over the building.
What crazy jockey is buzzing the field like that? Is that an Army plane, Charlie?
I can't see.
It's turning.
Charlie, alert the field.
I know that engine. Steve!
That's impossible.
Look, that's his ship.
It can't be.
Well, there's no other model like that. It's Steve, all right. He's coming in.
Thank God. Thank God. Quicker we get this done, the quicker you get over to see Mary and the baby.
Hank.
Elsie, give the order to check and refuel the rockets. I don't want anybody in here till I get Steve's reports. Bury any calls. All right, let's have it. What the devil happened to you?
Hank, does that cosmic ray bomb still go off tonight?
What are you talking about? Straighten out, Steve. Where you been for the last 10 hours?
Listen, Hank, there's something more important.
Come on, I've got to get a report on the screen to Washington, so let's have it. I've got to know how you stretch 10 minutes' fuel to keep you in the air for 10 hours.
Now, one thing before I talk.
Look, Steve.
Have the Geiger men run over the ship before they refuel.
What'd you run into?
So help me, Hank. I don't know. We better check and make sure it isn't radioactive.
Elsie, add a Geiger report on the standard check. Steve, maybe we better have the doc look you over, too.
No, I'll be all right. They said I'd be all right.
They? Look, son, I know you've had a tough time, but we've had this field on the alert for 10 hours. One of the Army boys cracked up looking for you, and he's hurt bad. So let's have the story. Let's have it straight.
I don't know how to tell you. Hank, I saw something up there.
At 300 miles?
I chased something up there, Hank, and I caught it.
Now, don't hand me that.
Listen,
Steve.
I was cruising along, just starting the right bank, when I spotted something. It must have been going about half my speed. It was egg-shaped and smooth. I made a pass at it, and I was coming back for another, and then there was a humming sound.
Humming?
A sort of vibration. And I blacked out. I was headed straight for it at 4,400 miles an hour. I thought it was going to be the biggest smash since Hiroshima, and Hank, is there a drink in that bottle?
Never mind that, Steve. What happened?
I came to inside their ship.
Uh-huh. Steve, this whole thing has been a devil of a strain on you. I'm going to call Major Donaldson from the Army base. Ask him to sit in.
Psychiatrist? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let him run his tests. He'll tell you I'm not kidding. Because, Hank, unless I miss my guess, I've just been tipped off to the way the world ends.
All right, Mr. Weston, suppose you continue your story.
Yes, let's have it, Steve. You woke up inside the ship?
Yes, and the place was jammed with machinery. Dials, blinkers. I couldn't recognize anything.
And you were surrounded by these men from Mars?
I didn't say anything about men from Mars. I didn't even say they were men. I couldn't see them clearly. They were just there.
Where did they come from, then?
Another galaxy. Millions of miles outside of our solar system. That's all I know. You figure out where they came from.
And they came all that distance to find the Earth?
Yes.
Did they tell you that?
Yes.
You mean they spoke English to you?
No, they didn't. It's funny. I hadn't thought. They didn't really speak to me at all. They just planted the thoughts in my mind.
You mean thought transference, telepathy?
Yes, that's right.
We brought them here.
We did, Hank. We rang their bell. We brought them in.
How?
Ring my bell.
With our atomic explosions. Hank, that's why you've got to set up that bomb test tonight.
I'll give up.
Look, you've got to believe me, Hank. Oh, how can I make you understand?
Maybe I can help, Mr. Weston. Would you submit to narcopsychometry?
What's that?
Under proper drugs, I can put you back in this ship. By suggestion. Then we can get a playback record of your memory pattern on the audio circuit.
And how long will that take?
Half an hour. We'll have to go over to the lab.
Will you believe me if it checks?
It will give us an accurate memory picture of what your mind reports.
All right, let's go. Hank, you gotta believe me. We haven't got much time.
Weird and psychic sounds from Dimension X. The very first episode.
Yep, I've heard four different versions of the song, of the story, even one before, about 2 years before this on ABC Theater. They all are a little bit different. Escape did a version. And X-1, I think, used the same script. Dimension X, of course, here, the predecessor to X-1. And then the ABC Theater, there's only a couple episodes of Survive. That is one of the episodes. It's interesting because they spend a lot more time on the alien ship. So, you know, we'll play that one sometime because it
what?
Is different.
Alien ship? What?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
And Dale, I was telling you today, prior to the broadcast, in a lot of science fiction stories in the 1950s, also in comic books, 1950s and 60s, the easiest way to cross the language barrier for a literary device for aliens and foreign beings from another dimension is to introduce telepathy or thought transference. That way they skip over that little, why are you speaking English thing?
Well, it's a little easier
why do I think
than what they did. Yeah, it's a little easier
right.
than what they did in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where they stuffed a fish in their ear. The translator.
Yeah, well, I like the fish thing. I like the fish thing. But
so long and thanks for all the fish.
The greatest dolphins.
Made it greatest musical intro of all time. So long and thanks for all the fish.
I used that once when I was leaving a job in the print shop. I left a little note that said, so long and thanks for all the fish. And I don't think any of those printers had any idea what the heck I was talking about. But that's okay.
That's probably
okay.
The main reason to do it, to baffle them.
Mm-hmm. And that guy was crazier than I thought.
Yeah. I suddenly feel safer. And that's the way I want to leave him. Yeah, I approve of your methodology.
Yeah. Maybe we should be more careful around those printing chemicals.
Yeah, because after all, I was mostly harmless.
Mostly.
Which was the updated entry about Earth in the Hitchhiker's
right.
Guide to the Galaxy.
Right. Okay.
So it went from harmless
mostly
to.
Harmless.
Yep, it went from harmless to mostly harmless.
Mm-hmm.
We upgraded.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Well, let's
and
make sure we don't have to cut off the last 35 seconds.
Yep.
And get to part two of Dimension X, Outer Limit.
You should be getting drowsy now.
Count cool.
backwards from 10. 9. 8. 7.
He's under. Now we attach the head plate electrodes. The cortical pickup. Look out for that wire, Mr. Henson. Real steady. 31.3. Now throw that switch, Mr. Henson. I have to start him off by suggestion. All right, Steve. You're in your ship now. You're in the rocket.
Rocket.
You're in the rocket. You're in the rocket. And you've just sighted something strange.
Now I'm starting at 3 degrees right.
What's that?
Hey, there's something up here. Something shining.
His memory pattern. We're picking it up electronically.
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
It's piped through the audio circuits.
I'm getting static. I can't hear you, Hank.
This is where we lost contact with him.
I'm going to make a pass at it, and... Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. It's dead ahead.
No, but...
This is where he blacked out. There's no telling how long, minutes or hours.
What's that noise?
I don't know, quiet.
Where... How did I get in here? What... Who are you?
Is he seeing things?
Intergalactic Patrol... What's that?
What are they saying, Steve? What are they saying?
It's about nuclear fission. They know about it. They know the danger of it. Long ago, they had wars that almost destroyed them. But finally, they learned. Now they've outlawed war.
Go on, Steve.
They patrol space. When their detector picks up an atomic explosion, they send a patrol.
What are they going to do?
They've quarantined us.
Quarantined?
They've isolated the Earth. Because we don't know how to control ourselves yet. Until we learn will be a menace to the whole universe.
What is this nonsense?
Quiet. How are they going to do it, Steve?
They've spread a layer out here of, I don't know how to call it, all around the Earth. It's miles deep. When there's an atomic explosion on Earth, the radioactive particles will drift up to this layer and set off a chain reaction. It'll go around the world in microseconds. And that's the end.
The end? What's he...
Wait, wait.
Yes. Yes. I understand. I've got to bring back the warning. You're going to put me back in my ship to bring the warning.
Now what?
Blacked out again. I guess that's all.
What does all that mean?
It's what he remembers.
You don't think that really happened?
No, no. Narcopsychometry circuits produce what he remembers. It just means that Steve believes this happened.
I don't like to see this. I've seen too many top pilots snap. Steve is the best I've known. How bad do you think he is?
Frankly, outside of the presence of this well-organized hallucination, there's no sign of unbalance. May not be too serious. If he had a more plausible story, I'd be inclined to believe
him. Warning. Hank.
It's all right, boy.
Did you hear it, Hank? You understand?
Sure, sure. We've been quarantined.
Let me give you something to make you sleep, Steve.
But don't you understand? They fixed it so that if we set off one more nuclear explosion, that'll be it.
Of course. Don't roll your sleeve down.
You don't believe me.
Now, take it easy, Steve.
With a test tonight. They're setting off the CR bomb. Hank, what time is it?
11:20.
Well, it's scheduled for midnight. Hank, we got to stop that bomb.
Steve, let Donaldson give you the hypo.
Hank, you've got to believe me. I saw them. I got the warning. If we touch off that bomb tonight, it'll be the biggest galactic 4th of July of all time. The whole Earth will go up like a Roman candle. April 10th, 1965, the end.
Now, look, Steve, you better calm down. Don't you want to see Mary and the baby? You've got a new son, remember?
Yeah, that's just it, Hank. I want to see my son. I want him to live. If that bomb goes off, Hank, we've got to stop them.
Mr. Hansen, I think we'd better get over to the base hospital.
Hank, you've got to believe me.
Yeah, sure, sure, Steve. Maybe there is something to it. Look, it's out of your hands. I'll put it in a report and shove it into Washington in the morning.
In the morning? There isn't going to be any morning, Hank. Don't you understand? You've got to call Washington now. Get the head of the security commission and postpone that test.
Now, you know I can't do that, Steve. My neck would be out a mile. Besides, this is 1965, not 45. 20 countries have atomic bombs now. What's the use of stopping just this one? The rest will keep right on popping them off.
Well, then we'll have to call an international conference. Can't you understand, Hank? The first one that goes off finishes us at the end. They've given us the quarantine warning.
Steve, I think you'd better go with us to the base hospital.
But look, Steve. We can call up for a detail if we have to.
All right, all right. I'll go with you. You don't need a straight jacket.
That's the way, Steve. You'll probably feel better by morning. Let's go.
Well, Steve, tomorrow I'll drive you over to the hospital to see Mary and the kid.
Sure.
Look at the ship under the floodlights. Pretty, huh? You'll be flying her again soon, don't you worry.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. What you doing out in the line? The refueler?
Yeah, we got Clausewitz coming in tomorrow from Denver for another test. Figure we give you a day off.
That's good. That's fine.
Steve! Steve, come back! Come on, Donaldson. Steve! Steve, wait!
He's heading for the rocket! Look, there he goes up.
That crazy fool. We can't get at him now. That covers armor glass.
He's waving.
Yeah, towards control. Where's the radio? He means the radio. Come on.
I should have gotten help.
Well, the radio's still hooked up here. Hello. Hello, Steve.
Listen to me, Hank. You got to call Washington now.
Come out of that rocket, Steve.
I'll call my men.
Don't try anything, Hank. They refueled the rocket for tomorrow.
Take it easy, Steve.
Listen, you know what'll happen when I fire the rocket tubes down here?
Steve, don't.
It'll burn out every building for 5 miles. All of us in one big blast.
Steve, what do you want?
You've got to stop that bomb. You've got to call Washington right now.
They won't believe me.
You make that call or I cut in the rocket. Now, I mean it, Hank. Now, hook my screen to yours in parallel. I want to see exactly what you're doing.
All right, all right. Just don't fire those rockets.
Get going, Hank.
You got 12 minutes to make that call and stop that bomb.
All right, I'm making the parallel hookup right now. Donaldson, you think he'll really blast?
I don't know. Up to now, I'd almost say it was normal, but now he's liable to do anything, Hanson.
Steve, there, you're getting it on your screen?
Yeah. Now, put that call through.
All right.
Operator.
Visa screen to Washington.
The visa screen circuits are busy, sir. If you'll try again in half an hour.
This is Security Commission priority. Break in, get me a line.
Yes, sir. Just a moment, please.
10 minutes, Hank.
Listen, Steve, I'm trying.
We're ready to take your call, sir.
Washington, Security Commission 3, this is urgent. I want Undersecretary Herbert Ames.
Washington 3, one moment, please.
Hurry, will you?
One moment, please.
What time is it, Donaldson?
11:51.
Do you think he'll fire those rockets?
He might.
Washington?
Visa screen 3, Mr. Herbert Ames, please.
That is a coded exchange. I cannot accept your call without clearance.
Get it through, Hank.
Listen, Washington, put it through. This is Mr. Hansen at San Marco Air Base. This is a priority call. I'm coded.
One moment, please. I will check your code number.
You get that through, Hank, and that bomb goes off at 12.
Will you be reasonable, Steve?
Your call has cleared, San Marco. Washington, visa screen 3, Herbert Ames, please.
Security Commission Ames.
Listen, Ames.
Oh, hello, Hanson.
Ames, you've got to get me to the chief.
Are you kidding? He's at the test control room.
Yes, I know, but get him for me.
What's up? You look lousy. Or is it a bad circuit?
There's no time. I've got to get him before the test. It's about the CR bomb.
I can take that responsibility.
Get that through, Hank. Right, Blaine.
Hey, what's going on there?
Ames, my project has a high enough rating. This is a priority A call.
What? Well, okay, it's your neck. I'll try to get him for you. He's in the control room, so you'll have to switch off your screen and speaker and go on earphones. Too much going on in there. Security ruling.
You hear that, Steve? I've got to cut the incoming screen.
All right, but don't try anything. 8 minutes, Hank.
Hello. Hello. What?
You got him, Hank?
Yes. This is Hanson at San Marco. No, sir. Priority A request to cancel the bomb test. No, I'm serious. This is deadly serious. We sent the X-2 JTR up today to the outer limit. We uncovered evidence. Yes, on the automatic instruments. What's that? No possible chain reaction. No, I can't tell you the whole story. There isn't time here. Yes, I'll bring the readings into Washington in the morning. You've got to postpone the test till you see them. Look, I've worked on contracts for the commission for 10 years. Yes, I have complete confidence in my information. You can record that. All right, I'll call you back immediately. Bye.
Thanks. Hank?
He's agreed to cancel, Steve. The bomb won't go off. All right, boy. You can come down out of that ship.
He's opening up. Here he comes.
All right, Steve. Come on down.
Sure, Hank. Just a second.
Hank, I was scared. I was plain scared.
Easy now. It's all over. The bomb won't go off.
Thank God. Look, I want to see Mary and the baby. Can you get me transportation now?
Oh, wait a minute. It's almost 12. They won't let you in the hospital now.
I want to see the baby.
Sure you do, but you've been under a strain. I've got a shot for you here, Steve. Give you a good night's sleep. All right. Roll up your sleeve.
Yeah, here.
Yeah, that'll make you sleep. Sergeant will find you a bed.
Yes, sir. Come on, Mr. Weston.
Okay. Good night, Hank. I'm kind of beat. It's been a tough night.
It sure has. I thought for a minute he was going to blast those rockets and send us all to Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
Quite a stunt getting the ray bomb test called off.
It isn't called off.
But the chief said...
Ames couldn't get the chief. I was talking to a dead circuit. Bomb goes off in a couple of minutes.
Oh. Poor Steve. He was one of the best.
He was the best. 1 in 10 million.
Some story of his, poor guy. For a while, he almost had me believing that quarantine. That's a very common delusion. End of the world.
Yeah. I suppose so. Ah, it's a nice night. Never saw the stars so bright.
We better be getting in. That wind is cold.
Well, the bomb goes off in 30 seconds. Poor Steve.
You know, Hanson, there's just one thing.
Yeah?
It's outside my field, but I'm curious. How did he keep that ship in the air for 10 hours with only 10 minutes fuel?
You have just heard The Outer Limits by Graham Doerr, an adventure in time, space, and the unknown Dimension X. Now, about next week. Have you ever heard of the Mark III? The amazing electronic brain at Harvard that instantly solves the most complicated scientific problems. Suppose you had a mechanical brain like that in your house. A robot that was always at your service, so that you could just sit with folded hands and relax the rest of your life. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Perfect. That's what they thought when it happened in the year 2006. But they were wrong. Terribly wrong.
How? I remember that.
I'll tell you next week.
I bet you
Tonight's
won't.
Story, transcribed on Dimension X, The Outer Limit by Graham Doerr, was adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Joseph Julian as Steve, Wendell Holmes as Hank, and Joe DeSantis as Major Donaldson. Your host is Norman Rose. Music was by Albert Berman. Sound designed by Sam Monroe. Edward King directed.
It's all a bad dream.
Tomorrow, here's Sam Spade. Now it's Truth or Consequences on NBC.
With Bob Barker. Jesus, what was that? Apologize for that noise. Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
If a warning is perceived as an empty threat, it isn't much of a warning, is it?
I never thought of it that way. More first-run shows tomorrow. The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, starring Agnes.
Agnes Moorhead. In the very first, the very first CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
How about that, kids? Good stuff.
We got 2 minutes. Is that right?
Yeah, about a minute and a half, I'd say.
Okay. Superman gets kicked over. Or is that for tomorrow?
That's for tomorrow.
We're going to try to sneak that in tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Okay.
We made it through.
Spoiler alert. There'll be no surprises around here.
No, I get confused over here.
I got your outer limit.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Different outro. Join us next week at this same time when the control voice takes you to the Erie Limits.
Ooh.
Cool. Kind of. Yeah, tomorrow night, we're here at 6:30 Eastern for the live deal, all right? And that's CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and maybe a bonus Not so surprising show. and right after that, what happens at 8 o'clock?
If all goes well and my internet holds.
Quickly.
Yeah. Horrible Horror starring Garza Gould. Blah, blah, blah. There you go.
That's cool.
That's right. Check them out on them there Twitches, links up on Facebook and all that fun stuff. The Book of Faces. Good night.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Ooh, it got louder when the live part went off.
It did.
It didn't kind of.
So we didn't get a Vincent Price on that. We got an Outer Limit. Okay.
Well, yeah, see, the last show was called Outer Limit. So.
Right.
That was sort of an Outer Limits-y type program, too, really.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
That
yeah.
story. But how could he...
While we were being amused by old-time radio, I ran across an advert from Books A Million, and one of the books that they were selling was How to Sell a Haunted House.
How to Sell...
Something...
A haunted house.
Yeah, someone's making money on that.
Yep.
I'm gonna write a book: How to Sell a Haunted Motel, How to Sell a Haunted Car, How to Sell a Haunted Tissue Box
for Dummies.
for Dummies. Yeah, even better for Dummies.
Yeah.
If I'm gonna get sued, let's get sued by a whole bunch of people for Dummies. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And then you just
like,
say
really?
It was parody. It was just parody.
Yes, it was a joke. I was kidding. The Haunted Brazier. I mean, you know, you could do all kinds of crazy stuff. You know?
Yes. Yeah, thank goodness Uncle Gildy wasn't selling brasiers.
Yeah, girdles. Girders. The Haunted
girders.
Yes.
Girders. Yep.
Haunted girders. Yeah, there you go. I thought, yeah, someone's making money off that. The Haunted Nuclear Plant.
go
crazy. What is in Haunted? I've been saying for years. Exactly. I've been saying for years, if there's anything that needs faulting, Chernobyl did it. Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
A new species? Definitely Chernobyl did it.
Yes.
Natural selection, my butt. Yeah.
That's right.
It's
yeah.
Chernobyl.
It's Chernobyl.
Okay.
No, it couldn't have been all that cloning. No, it was Chernobyl.
It was Chernobyl, yeah.
Yeah,
what's weird is that nature has absolutely taken over that area. Plants are growing. There are animal species there. They're all viable.
Yep.
Yeah, the world is reclaiming itself there.
13 and horns. And
they glow in the dark.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think I'd be... If somebody was hunting, I don't think I'd be eating none of that meat.
Yeah.
I'm
waiting for it to show up at the... Waiting for it to show up at the supermarket. Chernobyl meat!
Yeah. Thanks, but no. I will pass, yes.
Yeah.
Hey, Bubba, how come you're all lit up like a Christmas tree?
Chernobyl burgers. Yeah.
You know it's good. My lips are burning. Okay.
They burn right off.
They burn. They're nothing.
Here,
it's a little Chernobyl burger.
Get yours now. While they last.
Which is what?
Wow.
12,500 years or something like that.
Yeah, the half-life is about...
Yeah, what a shelf life on that pointy.
It's not a shelf life, it's a half-life.
Yeah, there you go. I don't have my boinger.
Fun with physics.
Yeah.
Wait, nobody said there'd be math on the show tonight.
Not math, it's science.
No.
Oh, that's different.
I did break out the Goculator on that thing with the Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
And that judge was pretty rough for 1940 money. like $50,000 to $100,000 back then would be like $1 million. It's like, what the heck?
Easily would be that today. That's a lot of dough. It was crazy.
So, and Dale, the vampire in that trailer was Nicolas Cage as Dracula.
I thought that at first when I saw him, and I'm like, and then when they showed like a close up, I'm like, is that Marilyn Manson?
Oh no, that's makeup.
I'm sorry, Nick, if you're listening, I apologize.
Right.
You know,
well, he'll be calling
you know,
in
he
tomorrow.
Might be, and you never know.
Yeah, he'll be calling in tomorrow, I'm sure.
Nicolas Cage, yeah.
To give you all kinds of scorn. Yeah.
Well deserved in my case. Not for you guys. You guys don't deserve it, but I do.
So that particular film, Renfield, sounds like it's like a really dark comedy.
Yeah, it does.
It does seem that way, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it has Nick Cage, so how can you miss?
Well, there he goes, calling in again.
I've got a Nick Cage movie for you that if you haven't seen it, you need to. Yeah.
The one where he thinks he's a vampire?
No.
Okay.
It's called Matchstick Men. Matchstick Men.
Matchstick Men? They make matches? What?
Matchstick Men. Have you never heard the expression Matchstick Men?
No.
It's a very old expression for like a con artist.
Hey.
Oh, okay.
And he's extremely quirky. I mean, like more so than usual in it. He has like a nervous tic, and it's hilarious. It's hilarious.
Okay.
But it's a really neat movie with a couple twists in it, as con movies tend to be, movies about con artists.
Yeah, there was one called The Grifters that was kind of weird years ago. I can't remember who the heck is.
All I remember is The Sting. The Sting was very good comedy.
The Sting, yeah, that one.
Great.
The Grifters had... It's weird. Age beats us up the more it happens, The Grifters.
Yes.
What? Okay. Angelica Houston and John Cusack, 1990s, The Grifters. And it was a bunch of grifters. It was like a bunch of different ones. And they were grifting on each other. Like one made a score, and then they tricked one person out of it, and then another person tricked them out of it. And it was just
cool.
It was like
those
a hot potato.
Yeah.
Hot
those
potato
are fun type.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun type movies. Fun type movies.
That I can't believe I even remember the name of it. 1990? Good grief.
Hmm.
I did something over the break. I chronicled all the places I lived, and apparently, and it's amazing because it equates to the same number of jobs I've had.
A Rolling Stone gathers no moss.
Yeah, and you know, and you find yourself in a new tax bracket every time, probably.
Depends which way you're going. Billion?
No, I think I'm up to over 10 different places I've lived. Soon to be 11 if I find it somewhere else.
or if the law catches up to you.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, something like that. I don't know if I – let's see.
Well, I am amazed I am this perky after having been up since 1 a.m.
Yeah, you should go get some rest about. I'm fatigued, and we've only been here for an hour or so.
Or 2 hours or so, yeah.
2 hours, yeah.
Well,
What's the longest you guys have ever been in one place, like a residence?
I'm going to say my current home.
Right. That's what mine is, 24 years.
We're about 22 years
here. I'm thinking probably, I probably would have been, Possibly this place in Buffalo. Both were about 7 years at that point. At this point, this will beat that one this year. So, but yeah, I've only been in one place like 6-7 years at a time at best.
Yeah, and I love it where I'm at. I mean, there's, you know, it's like anywhere. Things can't be perfect all the time, but I love it here, and I want to die in this house. Not soon, but
if you say that,
not now. That wasn't an invitation.
Denise, I got some news for you, Denise.
I want to find a place I want to die at. This isn't it.
Because staying increases the chances.
I know. Maybe this will be the year I get out of here, which would be amazing.
I hope so.
When I find a place, it's definitely going to put me a little bit closer to you guys. I know that.
Well, like I was going to say,
cool. That's very cool.
There's parts in Ohio that, you know, you said you like the snow business. You missed the snow. So.
Yeah,
get your shovel and get over here.
I know for a fact that there's definitely a VA hospital somewhere in Ohio somewhere.
Oh, yeah. We got a big one here, don't we, Dave?
Yeah.
I thought they closed that.
Well, the place I'm targeting on hitting has a big one as well.
I thought they moved it. They closed it? The one in Brentsville?
Well, they probably did. Is that where it was?
Yeah, they've been closing quite a few of them.
The Carl Stokes, didn't they close that one?
That one I don't know. I know there was a big deal. Was it in Brecksville or somewhere?
There was one in Brecksville. I don't know whether it's still there or not. I don't know.
There's got to be something. There's a lot of veterans from this area.
There are. Mm-hmm. There are. A lot of old people stuck in Ohio.
They announced that last year. That there were going to be a lot of closures. And people are like, oh, don't close it. And it's like, no, they're closing them because the facilities are now like 50 years old. They need to build new ones. And that's what they're doing it for. But it was misunderstood, I think, when it started to go that way. People were like, oh, no, don't close it. It's like, no, please close it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mr. Bill, the veteran. Oh, no! there were... Sergeant Bill. Oh, no!
And Sluggo.
Yeah.
Not like Sluggo from the Vortex. She's nice. But Sluggo on Saturday Night Live, evil.
Oh, my gosh.
Evil, yeah.
And Mr. Hand.
Yeah, wasn't it crazy? At one point in time, we were in stitches over Play-Doh on TV. I mean, come on. That was great. You know?
It was.
Yeah.
But going back to that, I bet there are a lot of the sketches from Mr. Bell that couldn't be played in 2023.
Well, only
somebody would have
trauma because their Play-Doh thing got squished or something.
Don't squish my Play-Doh.
Or it had some
really?
Deep, dark, secret meaning that it
mm-hmm.
destroys my nationality or something.
Or
interests or whatever.
Right.
Getting old, too.
Right? Yeah,
getting old.
But that's okay because we are too.
True.
Yeah. We are the curmudgeon. Yes, we are.
It's fun to be curmudgeon-y a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Be that crusty old man you never wanted to be. If I had only known how much fun it could be.
Oh no. That actually the epitome, the ideology of old people would be summarized by Oscar the Grouch.
Yes.
Up to and including I Love Trash.
Hey, you kids, get away from my trash can. You know, that guy, you know.
Oh, he was great.
He was. And a lot of you were like, well, you know, if you said you liked Oscar the Grouch, who would like someone that mean? It's like, oh, no, he's hilarious.
Yeah.
He was the only one on Sesame Street that actually spoke his mind. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Let's take the blinders off there.
He had no filter.
None whatsoever. I hate everything. Trash is wonderful. You know,
oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Could you imagine what would come out of his mouth if it were nowadays?
Oh, my. I think there is like an R-rated version of a puppet show out there somewhere.
Oh, I am sure somebody has at least spoofed it in that manner. If not, I would have as a teen.
Yeah, I ran across something where it was the puppets were dropping F-bombs, and it was like, what am I watching? This is hurting my sensibilities.
Well, there was a show on Comedy Central called Crank Anchors where they didn't exactly swear, but oh my.
Yeah, they wouldn't. Yeah, it was
adult
right.
Humor.
They
know?
Still had. Yeah, they still had to abide by FCC.
It was a cable show.
They don't now.
I don't know.
Yeah, for a while they were still not really sure. They weren't on solid ground, and then they were like, "No, we're cable. We'll do anything we want. Leave us alone."
Yeah. So now it's not only the parents who aren't watching the kids.
Yeah, really.
Hey, wait a minute. That's not funny.
I mean, I absolutely was the TV was my babysitter.
Yeah.
In the morning, I'd get up and I'd watch the hosted children's program, and I'd watch it again in the afternoon.
Yep.
And, you know, it was everything was safe.
Yeah.
And not anymore. Kids said hoobaloo goodbye. That's gone.
Yeah. Mm. And another century goes by.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Somehow we're not getting any younger, and the world is getting weirder.
Yeah. I know. It's funny when did you ever have a young person kind of, I don't know, look down on you because of your age or something like that? Because either you don't get a reference, or maybe you're not as computer friendly as they are.
Yeah. Well,
it is weird. Well,
We were really dumb, but we didn't have to have signs that say "wash your hands when you come out of the bathroom."
Yeah,
no, that's true.
Because we had parents who told us to do that, or else.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Five across the eyes. No, I'm kidding. Sort of.
Like I said, I don't know what train travel would be like today because everybody would be wearing masks and. You know, you're in a very, it's almost like a cruise ship, but it's on a rail line, you know, where you're stuck with other people. And this is the one pull away from all this is you can't govern other people. You can't sit there and browbeat them or, you know, say words to them about, well, you should have a mask or you shouldn't have a mask or you should watch your hands. You shouldn't watch, you know. The only person you can police is yourself. That's it. And good luck with that. You know?
But I
constantly run across things where people are aghast at the behaviors of others. And it's like, well, then don't hang out with the others because they're insane. We know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, and I don't want to blame the internet, but maybe science fiction was right. We are not yet mature enough as a species for certain things that we are able to do, like controlling the. Controlling the atom.
Yeah.
different little things. You know, little fun thing. Gee, we're getting Eerie House.
It's not the things that. It's what could be done with certain people. It's not the necessarily the science that happens. It's what people do with the science.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
You know.
And then who gets to say who gets to know what? You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know.
It gets deep at that point.
And this is going back hundreds of years, but for medical study, there were preconceived notions about not cutting apart a human body. And it's like the only way we figured out how our bodies work is cut open a corpse. And they were like, oh, no, you can't do that. It was,
yeah,
you know, kind of a thing.
Well, I think
and
that
then
was
later
religion.
It was like, oh, no.
I think that was religion versus science, you know.
And yeah, and folk
to some degree, at least.
And you know, lightnings was the fang of the gods or whatever. Yeah, it was just an old weird thing. And now we understand the only way to do this. Like, I had a notion in my head the other day. Like, have we actually mapped and understood completely what every aspect of the brain does? I don't think we've done that yet.
Oh, hell no, we haven't. There's still a huge portion of the brain we don't know what it does.
Exactly. Any more so than we've mapped the depths of the ocean.
Right.
And yet we want to go into outer space.
I don't know if
we're ready.
But we have and we can. You know,
yeah, we have and we can.
I know what's in the brain and it's dirty.
Well, mine at
wow,
least.
Okay.
mine for sure.
Next year for Christmas, Dave gets a sponge and some soap. That's what he gets.
Lava.
With the lava, Larry.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that lava was some rough stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It was like sandpaper.
Didn't
want to
get
form.
Your mouth washed out with that stuff, boy.
Oh, God. What the? No. Never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and of all the flavors of soap, I would say lava's on the bottom.
Yeah.
That's a pretty rough taste in soap.
As a connoisseur of soap.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah.
Let me just say.
Oh.
Bleh.
Mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know if that's a pastime anymore. That'd be probably considered child abuse. He washed my mouth out with soap. I had to put soap in my mouth. Yeah,
what kind of soap? Lava? Give him 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can't even look at a picture of a kid, you,
uh-huh.
You horrible person.
You
depraved clown. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Should have used the life boy.
Yep. And I wouldn't have gone blind.
Yeah. I think about this. I think behind lava, next up would be like Irish Spring.
Oh,
I like Irish Spring.
Yeah.
With that green stripe in there. Who knows what that was.
It might taste like a peppermint patty, you know? You don't know until you try
it. It doesn't.
Have you tried?
I'm not saying I took a bite of it like a candy bar, but I think it.
A candy bar.
Yeah. Oh, so this is some good stuff. It's kind of chewy, though.
Oh, gosh, you're killing me.
That's why I'm here.
Yes. Do you mean it's on purpose?
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh, cat's out of the bag.
Uh-oh.
Do you have a license to go with that bad joke, sir?
No.
Which bad joke?
No, I'm a freelancer.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, shoot.
Well, gentlemen.
Saw a picture.
I do believe it's about time to bring
in
the one, the only Mr. James Durante.
Mr. Durant, if you please, where are you hiding? There you are.
Good night. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
It's time to say good night. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
What more is this say but good night?
I guess nothing.
We've had a few laughs. And it's time for toodaloo.
Toodles.
Or three to
loo. What we should think.
Or four to loo.
Fruit of the Loom. The Fruit of the Loom. Not the Fruit of the
Loom. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
I think she's in the corner.
Where does she belong?
Eenie, meenie, chili beanie. The spirits are about to speak.
Ha ha ha.